This week's episode of Here's What I'm Good is brought to you by our own bonus episode coming after we record this. That's right. The bonus content is back. Thank you for all your support. And welcome back to Here's What I Don't Get, from north to south, east to west, the only intercontinental podcast to tackle all of life's toughest issues and the longest consecutively running podcast on the See You Next Tuesday podcast network. I am your host, Tad Burke, coming to you live from the most dangerous city in America, St. Louis, Missouri. And joining me from way down south, it's your favorite Paraguayan uncle. That's right. Captain CPAP himself, El Chaco.
Hola, mi enchada!
Tab, welcome back.
2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
2 weeks in a row.
Are we doing next week, too? Are we going to be able to do three? I don't know. I don't have to look at my schedule.
Maybe. That's Shrove Tuesday, isn't it? No. Yes, it is. It's Shrove Tuesday. I'll be full of pancakes at that point in time. We'll see. Yeah, that could possibly work out well.
Yeah.
Long week.
I don't know what any of that means.
Shrove Tuesday is the night before Lent begins.
Yeah.
And it harkens back to a time where people actually did proper fasting during Lent and didn't have a bunch of the different foods. So what they would do is they would empty out their pantry basically on the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday. And I don't know, somewhere along the line that turned into making pancakes. And so we do a pancake dinner on the Shrove Tuesday before Ash Wednesday starts. I'm not going to be fasting fully this year for Lent, but I will, like, as I shared with you earlier, I'm going to quit smoking. And I've reacquired a copy of Alan Carr's Easy Way to Stop Smoking, and it works. It has worked in the past. I've, you know, been able to quit with it, and it's a good thing. And then, I'm going to try to push some other things. Like, my wife's been getting really into like the working out and exercising, and I'm going to try to follow her lead. And
yeah.
I think the main thing I keep always running into is every time I get into a rhythm, I get sick or I get injured, and then I just fall right off of it. So this time around, my goal is to do some form of physical exercise activity 6 days a week, every day but Sunday. And I'll see if I can keep that up.
I'll tell you one of the great ways that you can motivate yourself when working out. And that is to insult Tony from Hack the Movies. I'm in his Discord, and he has a channel called Fat Shame Tony. And so I've spent the last year, next Thursday will be like 1 year of going to the gym consistently. And so I go into his Discord every time I go to the gym, if I remember, and I snap a selfie, and then I usually insult him in some way. And I found it immensely motivational to do that when I was first going into the gym regularly. And then like a few other people have joined in and are doing it. But then a couple of guys joined like in the last month or so. And we were all kind of teasing Tony for fun and, you know, supporting one another, insulting him in kind of like a fun between friends ways. These guys are there for blood. They are here to destroy Tony and everything he has ever loved.
That kind of incentive is great though. And I think the other thing is like in Here's What I Don't Get lore history, I've never been the like chubbier guy on the show, you know. Like,
yeah.
This is new territory for me. So I gotta end that streak real quick and get back on track. But it's been hard, right? Like injuries. The heat does something to you, you know, like it's, when it gets like, when I first bought the property, I used to go and do a lot of like yard work I used to work in this corner. I was trying to resuscitate this one corner that was all just like rock and hard clay. And so I was putting down stuff and chopping up, you know, all of our branches from our orange trees and trying to get that going again. And I would go out there and I would just sweat buckets and buckets and buckets. And it was like, after a while, like my joints started hurting and I was like, okay, I got to figure this out. That's when I built the gym. But the problem is I got the gym. It's got a boxing, like a heavy bag. It's got an exercise bike. I got some jump rope in there. I got, you know, some mats to work out on, and I got a couple of kettlebells, but I don't really have it fully stocked yet. I want to push some iron around, but I haven't gotten around to that yet. So at some point in time, I think through this next little bit, like the key thing too with Lent is not just giving things up, but it's also like finding a detached, like to actually detach, get a detachment from those things that you're addicted to. And yeah. I noticed that like when I get up, you know, in the morning, I have this routine. I get up, I say my prayers, I grab my phone. If there's a hockey game the night before, I watch the highlights of the hockey game. And then I put on a pot of coffee. And then while the coffee is going, I have a cigar and then come back in, drink the coffee, read some more on my phone. And then, you know, basically waste time until breakfast. And then after that, just get off and go start my work day. Yeah. That's a lot of time that it could be more useful, you know? And
yeah,
the thing about the cigars too, is like, yeah, they're cheap here, but like if you smoke them all the time, that adds up too. Yeah, yeah. It still adds up. Right. So, and like, it's funny. Cause like I got back into it. Like it used to be just like a little thing, right? Like I would have like a cigar here and there, you know, just to chill out on like a weekend. If we came out here for a weekend or something like that, I'd pour a glass of whiskey, have a cigar, hang out by the pool, go have a swim, come back out, finish the cigar, you know, and that was that. But then like dumb me, you know, always reading stuff and learning stuff. You know, I came across some studies that like kind of talked about nicotine not being as bad as you thought, like not, you know, yeah. The tobacco not being as bad as you thought and the benefits of nicotine. So I was looking into these benefits of nicotine and like, I don't know what I was thinking, but it was just like, okay, well, you know, maybe I can, you know, find a way to have some of that, but try to do it all natural, like not with cigarettes. Right. And so I bought like a pipe and, that didn't go so well. I tried to do the pipe thing, but like I never got good at packing the pipe. And
yeah,
packing a pipe is the most important part. Man, my pee popping with this sentence. This is going to be crazy for edit. So I would always burn my tongue. Like, yeah. And like, I would burn my tongue so bad that I wouldn't have like proper taste for like 3 days. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to smoke the pipe anymore. So I'll go back to the cigars. But then I was like, oh, it's always these cigars. It's kind of hard on you. So I like looked into like Swedish snus. So I was using those, like those little fermented
nicotine tobacco
packet things.
Yeah.
That's when I got actually addicted to nicotine again, was when I started doing those. And then I looked into the Zyn packs, you know, I tried the Zyn thing, but I didn't like the Zyn as much as the snus. I found that it like really cut into my gums more than the snus did. And also like the company that owns Zyn, they're politically problematic. So I, you know, didn't want to support them anymore. So then I was like, okay, well, I can't just smoke these hulking cigars all the time. So I found these guys. This is, you can't even see with the light. There we go. Nah, that's nothing. Cafe Cremas.
Yeah.
And so they're like these mini cigars and they're, you know, they hit the spot, but like there's 10 in a pack and you go through them in a day, easy. And so, I mean, my doctor said that my lungs are fine. But like this cough that I've had for like, geez, the last like 3 episodes I've been coughing. Right. Mm-hmm. And she said, it's just my allergies. And it's true. It only comes on. It's first thing in the morning and it's in the evening. So when the like temperature is a little different, I don't cough during the day, but I cough like crazy at night. But I have this feeling that's like, you know, it's probably something tied to that. If it's not causing it, it's just prolonging it. So I think it's a good idea. And so, you know, I'm not knocking anybody who does smoke, but for me, I think it's just, it's time.
Yeah, so, that's smart. It was a really long weekend of like, so they changed the blow slots at the glass studio, and they went from
not the five blow slots.
Yeah. Five slots a day down to four slots a day. Oh. And so now the studio is booked out. Like, we were booking stuff March 30th. We booked a slot for March 30th that I now have to miss. And we were the last ones to be able to book for that week. And it's like, okay, someone's going to have to figure this out, because this is not going to work. There are 30 or 40 artists trying to work out of this spot. And yeah, if you guys are taking... Yeah, if you guys are only offering, 25 spots a week, and four of those spots are the studio itself's production time, like, something's got to change there. So I'm kind of frustrated about that. But so what was in there working on Sunday, and I've been trying to make these pulled neck bottles. And so to get ready for this exhibition, if you're watching the live stream, this piece right here, this was part of my burn series that I released last year. I made this again, but instead of it being a damaged vessel, it's a whole vessel. And I was pulling the neck out, stretching the neck out. And there's this little trick you do where you put in a line and you kind of like pull this little flower. So this has this little flower still on it. You pull out that little flower and you can use it as a handle to stretch the neck. And then you put in a line and you can snap off the very end of the bottleneck, and you have a nice clean opening. Well, my assistant whacks the flower to knock the neck off, and it just comes off in my hand. So I'm holding it with a set of diamond shears. I walk it over to the knockoff table. I make an emergency punty. I pick it back up. Got the piece finished. It is the best pulled neck bottle I've ever made. I was so stunned when it went into the annealer and like survived the whole process. It was like winning the Super Bowl and the Indy 500 in the same day. I was about to do victory laps around the building. It was such a great feeling.
There was a thing I saw on YouTube the other night. I want to send you a link to it. And it was this old timey kind of parlor trick toy called a pop boat. Have you ever heard of these things?
Yes.
And I saw that the guy, to show how it worked, he made one out of glass with like two tubes that ran out the back and then the tank at the top. And I was wondering, maybe Tab could make one of those. Maybe Tab could become a pop-up boat maker at some point in time.
That was probably torch worked. Because I think I've seen that same video. Don't you like light a candle in it or something?
Yeah. You put a little tea light candle underneath
it. Yeah.
Well, that's funny how the algorithm sent it to both of us then. My weekend was action packed. We went to Asuncion on Saturday, had an appointment for my son, and I wanted to cram as much stuff into it as possible. So, for example, like my brother took some extra, my brother's the one who usually sends me my wire transfers. I made him a co-owner of my, like, a joint account up in Canada. So when I get paid by my Canadian clients, I can get a large sum just wired down by my brother. But he took on some extra work this time around. So I had to kind of do a workaround because he was not going to be back until after my mortgage payment. So what I did, I found out that there's like this, like the main thing down here is at an ATM. This currency is going to sound wild to you guys, but like, it's like the most you can take out of an ATM is 1.5 million Guaranese at a time, which is about $210, $220 American, $300 Canadian. And then you can only do two of those in a day per card. So you can only get 3 million out. But my mortgage payment's 12. So I found out from a friend of mine that one of the, like, you know, these like digital banks, you know, the like have cropped up and they're like totally not.
Or it's just an app on your phone kind of deal.
Sort of. Yeah. So one of them started off like that, but it ended up buying a real bank and it's got like its own bank machines. And my buddy, who's got the same Canadian account as me, like the same bank as I do in Canada, he found out that you can take 8 million out at a time. And I was like, oh, awesome. And like my main Paraguayan account, they don't have any bank machines out where I'm at. and they don't. So I had to go take 8 million out and then immediately deposit it into my Paraguayan bank machine. And you can only deposit 10 a day. So my friend then, I just transferred him the money, Canadian account to Canadian account. And he went in the next day, took out another 8 million, threw it in there for me. But have you heard of a quinceañera before?
Yeah, it's like your 15th birthday party.
Yeah, we're like Latin American cultures, they like spend like crazy on these things. They spend, some of them spend more on it than a wedding.
Yeah.
Like I've seen people like double mortgage their house on them and stuff, or sell a house and
that's insane. And
spend insane money on it. So it was like a big deal, right? And I got invited to one. But like the timing on it doesn't, it's not going to work. It was on like a Sunday night and I got to work the next morning and it was in Asuncion and it started at 8, which means it starts at 10:30. And then, so I had to kind of stick handle my way into, because like Paraguayan culture, they don't like no. So you have to sort of, it's like, it's more socially acceptable to say yes and not come than say no, I can't come. But that'd be a lie. So
yeah,
I still said no, I can't come. And he was upset about this. He was the guy, the dad of this girl. So, you know, I tried to stick handle the best I could and explain my situation. And, you know, it was an honor to be invited and thank you very much and all this kind of stuff. So I went to go and buy a gift and then drop it off with him at the wrestling practice. And I went to, like, I asked my assistant, hey, what do you get a 15-year-old for quinceañera? Like, I have no idea. Like, I don't even know this girl very well.
Yeah.
So he sends me this story. He's like, you go there and just tell him it's a quinceañera gift. So I went to this store called Josefina. And it was like, you remember the movie Pretty Woman? Do you ever see the Julia Roberts movie?
Never seen it.
Pretty Woman?
I've seen bits and pieces.
Okay. Well, okay. Then this reference won't work for you. But I go into the store and the lady, and I'm like, can I get some help getting a gift for a 15-year-old? And she's like, yeah, she brings me over and there's like this beautiful like necklace and earring set. And I can't help but notice the price tag says like 1.3 million guarantee. I'm like, that's like, it's close to $300 Canadian. I'm like, yeah, I got like a budget of like 500,000 guarantees, you know, like, which down here, telling you, man, like a day rate for a worker is 80. So like we're talking like, you know, this is like four days work. Or no, sorry, more than that. It'd be more than that. What am I talking
days.
About? 6 days of work to do that. And no word of a lie. Now my Spanish is good enough. This lady chuckles and says, "You have a budget of 500,000?" I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Yeah, we don't have anything like that here. Where's this quinceañera in the bañados, which means like the slums?"
Yeah.
And
wow.
I was so shocked by this cuz I was like, "What the hell, man? Like 500,000 is like a good chunk of change down here. What are you what?" So I leave.
Yeah, of course.
Pissed off. And I, you know, I chide my assistant about this. I'm like, you would not believe what just happened at the store you sent me to. And he's like super apologetic and he's like really scared. And I'm like, I'm not firing you. Don't worry about it. Like, just chill out. It's all good. Like, it happens to the best. You didn't know.
Yeah.
So I go out and I'm like, I'll come up with something. And I got the idea in my head. We went to the really nice fancy grocery store where all the German goods are. And, you know, I see that I'm like, you know what? I might get like, I was going to get her like a thermos or something. Cause they do that iced tea drink here. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm going to get her a Stanley mug, you know, cause like,
yeah, the white women love them.
Exactly. So I go into the place and I pick out this one, but they have it on a stand. I'm like, do you got the a box for it? You know, where's the top? And they're like, well, the top's at the front desk. I'm like, do you have the box for it though? And then couldn't find the box. I'm like, well, I'm not buying it here. You know? Yeah. I can't give it to her without a box. So I did end up finding it later. I buy the thing. It was $520,000. This was close enough.
Yeah.
And I got it the premium, giant one with the straw and, you know, and I don't know this girl. I just know that women love Stanley mugs. Yeah. So I go and I bring, and this is another thing. Okay. Let's say you just said it was your sister's birthday tomorrow. It's my wife's birthday tomorrow. When you receive a gift, let's say somebody gives you a gift for Christmas, but they give it to you on December 20th.
Mm-hmm.
When do you open it?
If they're giving it to me right then, I'll usually right then.
Okay. What if they gave it to you on December 10th?
I'll probably still open it right then.
Okay. Okay. What about your birthday? If they give you to your birthday, how about somebody gave a gift to somebody else to give to you for your birthday?
So that I might save. Yeah. If they shipped it to me, I might wait, but if they're standing right there, I will open it.
See, maybe I'm just the weird one. I'm a stickler for the date. So, you know, if somebody gives me a birthday gift, even in front of them, I'm like, thank you. And then I put it aside and don't open it until my birthday, or thank you and don't open the gift, a Christmas gift until Christmas Day. So I gave it to him and, he gave it to his daughter. He sends me photos and she was over the moon happy. I nailed it. And her quinceañera is not in the slums. It's not in the bañeros. It's going to be a nice one. I'm just not going to be at it. So yeah. And then we drove back and it was the last weekend before school started back up on here. So the roads were absolutely madness and there was construction on the roads. And so I'm on this 2-lane highway. It's just 2 lanes and it's potholes everywhere. Normally nobody's on this one, but this one was packed to the gills and we get held up for 20 minutes before we were allowed to go. And as soon as we're allowed to go, it was like the zombie apocalypse. Everybody behind started zooming into the oncoming lane and onto the shoulder. And it was just this massive bottleneck at the end because there's only room for one car to go through at a time. And so, man, I was pissed off. And I was getting to the point where I was the guy's coming in from the shoulder and I'm finally near the front and they're going to try to cut in front of me. I'm like, the hell you are. I was basically riding the bumper of the guy in front of me. I wasn't going to crash or anything, but I was no, man, you need to learn a lesson. This is not
okay. Wait your turn.
I mean, it's shouting into the wind down here. Nobody's going to learn any of that shit, but it made me feel better, I guess, for about 5 minutes, but
yeah,
that was our weekend. Should we jump into some jokes? There's no jokes here.
Some issues.
Some issues.
Yeah. What's your first issue this week?
Here's what I don't get. Usury. You know what usury is, right?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Usury. Big problem. The UQ. And the thing is that, so you got this tariff thing going on between, United States and everybody. And you put some thought into it and you're like, okay, well, is that a just or an unjust taxation? And it's actually just because you're protecting your own people and or that's the intention, at least, to try to protect your own industry. And they're doing it because the government budget is so bloated, right? You need to cover so many costs. That until such time as you guys have slashed it all down to one computer running everything, you're pretty much beholden to these massive costs. But it's the taxes aren't enough. The economy is not enough. A simple sales tax is not enough. It's never going to cover any of these things. But if you actually look at the money supply, this is old news to most people that have been on the internet since 2010, but mm-hmm. like your money is debt based. And so yeah. it's not your money. It's owned by the Federal Reserve, which is not federal. It's not a government. It's not a government entity. It's a privately owned business. And so every dollar that you put into circulation comes with an interest rate attached to it. And if you think about all the dollars that are in circulation, that extra percentage has got to come from somewhere. You have to borrow to pay that back. And so it becomes this endless cycle. And I'm just around 2 years away from being debt free on my house. Mm-hmm. And in my entire adulthood, I've never been debt free. You know, it's a cycle. You get your first credit card and you make dumb payments on it. Sorry, dumb purchases on it. And then you're paying on it for a while. And then you get a student loan. You got interest on that. And then you get a house loan someday. Sometimes you get a car loan. I don't do car loans. I don't do like, I always buy cars with cash, but you know, like you realize like the amount of waste that usury causes, the amount of stress that usury causes. And the Bible is explicitly against it. There's nowhere in the Bible where it's like, it's okay. You know, yeah. Jesus does tell a parable of the talents where, you know, like these workers get given these basically gold pieces before the guy goes away. And then he comes back and that, you know, they've invested it and they've made returns on it. And one of them buries it. And he's like, well, you buried it. And he's like, well, the least you could have done is like, at least like put it in a, you know, some sort of a banking thing to get some interest on it or something. But it was a parable. So there's a reason it's illegal or in the Catholic Church, and it should be. And it was for like 2000 years or yeah. like 1800s, like it, and they loosened it. Like, well, you know, the government needs some extra money to be able to pay for these things. And, you know, like up in Canada, they're talking about legalizing Sharia banking, and yeah. like conservatives are up in arms like Sharia banking. Oh! And it's like, well, have you read about Sharia banking? Like I'm not Muslim or anything like that, but if you've read about Sharia banking, it makes it honors the fact that usury is illegal. Mm-hmm. So how do the banks that make these loans make any money off of it? And there's like the third way, which is like, okay, you can charge like a rent or a fee, but like compound interest is nasty stuff. Like it's pretty evil. And I got this friend, he just happens to be Jewish. But like we've had this debate about usury should be illegal, and he doesn't believe so because he's kind of still got those libertarian vibes to him. But you know, it's like I likened it to like in baseball where there was that steroid scandal. Mm-hmm. Okay, so a lot of these players were on steroids, and you ask yourself, like, why would you risk it to do that? Why would you take steroids, which are, you know, in a lot of ways done improperly, are harmful to you? They'll shorten your lifespan. They'll harm you. But when a lot of these guys got interviewed about it, they're like, I had to, because everybody else was on it. So if I wasn't on it, I wasn't going to stay in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like look at housing prices. Okay. There's so many different things that have gone into housing prices that make them more expensive than they should be. Mm-hmm. You know, because everybody say, well, the land is valuable. Yeah. The land is valuable. The house is worth nothing for most people. If you really factor it down, the house is like icing on top of the cake. But, you know, you get these houses that go up for sale and they're like $1 million. And then the next buyer just immediately knocks it down and puts something up that they like. But the reason why it's $1 million, the reason why these things are so expensive in a lot of ways is because of usury. Because you're paying a mortgage for 20, 30 years and you're paying it for your whole life, pretty much, mm-hmm. or your whole career. But if you didn't take the mortgage out, how long would it take for you to save up to pay in cash for a house? Like not many people, virtually no one can do that. Yeah. Unless you just, you know, made a movie and you got your first $6 million contract or something in Hollywood, or you're a professional athlete or something like that. But otherwise, you're not going to be able to pay with cash. It's a slavery device, right? Like usury will totally enslave you. It takes forever to pay down some of these things. And, you know, like, yeah, they give you a mulligan sometimes with like bankruptcy, but that doesn't get you all the way out. You know, like bankruptcy can be a one-time event for most people. It's not like a corporation owned by somebody like Trump that you can constantly have bankruptcies of these different corporations while you've, you know, gutted them of their assets beforehand.
Yeah.
But for most people, like, you get one shot at bankruptcy. It's very rare to get more than one. And even then, like, you got to have no assets before you can do that. So, like, you know, you get this predatory lending that comes in, and we've gotten to this point where we are like somewhat accepting of this like really dark evil on our society. It's really bad. Like, you know, I brought it up to you before, like when we talked about taxation, like even God only wants 10% in the Bible. Like, the tithing is only 10%. Yeah. But you've got, like, you know, these secondary lenders that are charging 35%. You know, you get some bad credit cards that are 25, 28. They give you these little like a money back ones or something like that. And maybe you get it at 18 or 21. You know, if you're really good credit, maybe you'll get 12. But yeah, even still, like, people don't realize how much this is eating away at everything.
At, like, your chance to earn wealth, to develop wealth.
By design. By design. You know, like, a lot of times, like, for example, the Protestant Reformation, right? People look at it, like, not all Protestants. I'm specifically talking about like the Anabaptists and maybe the Calvinists, specifically the ones who got really mad at the church because it had gold in it. You know, you had gold-plated chalices, or you had gold-plated gold things that were in there. Well, the thing about gold is gold stores value. And in times of plenty, people would still donate to the church to help out the poor. What people don't realize is a lot of that gold was stored there and could be resold, melted down, and was basically held its value there. It wasn't like these guys were walking around like Mr. T with gold chains on all the time. It's just, yeah, that wasn't the way it worked. But what made the whole thing go so fast was that because the Catholic Church outlawed usury, rightfully so, other groups were permitted to engage in usury. And they claim it was all, it's the only thing we could do. Is it though?
Yeah.
Is it though? So what would happen is that these predatory lenders, like, the other thing is, we've talked about this before, but, like, you know, serfdom had way more recreation time, way more free time. Why? Because, like, you did the harvest and then you paid your dues to the you know, the monarch, the lord of the land. And the problem is that you get these, like, people who are in those positions, the lords and the ladies, and they're getting paid in grain. They're getting paid in corn. They're getting paid in, like, you know, food stocks and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're not getting paid in gold. They just weren't. And so in order for them to keep up with the Joneses to look as good as the other lords, they needed to take loans out on these things to basically take out loans against their fiefdom to keep up with the Joneses, to look the part. And who was lending it to them? Well, people outside of the Catholic Church. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
And then what you got was, when the Reformation was happening, it's like, hey, this little small group of people have a beef with the Catholic Church. And to be fair, of the 95 theses of Luther, about 70, 75 of them were legit and definitely needed to be talked about and to be handled better. But there was an opening. And if we can get this group rallied up, we can go and sack these churches and take out all the gold and all the valuable artwork and take all of those things with us. And why do you need those things? To pay back your lenders. And to, yeah. So you had all these rulers go along with it because, well, they didn't really believe that much anyway. They were just held back by, you know, having to be in a Christendom at the time. And so like it goes back a long way. And there's a reason why usury is something that offends God is because it harms his people like really badly. And yeah. I don't know what the solution is, but like, I don't know. What's your experience with debts and interests and all this kind of stuff?
I feel like what our society is kind of built around, basically exploiting you into, being like, so what happens, I think the story that's pretty common and probably a big reason why there's been the societal push towards go get a degree. You know, you get into college, that's usually when you get your first like, Capital One student pro Quicksilver or, you know, Discover or Citibank and, you know, whomever that you get some credit card application, like I will give you like $500 or $1,000 in credit. And then you're like, yeah, this is great. I can build credit. And then you buy some stupid shit, you know, sound system for your car or some kind of thing. And then it's like, oh, money's tight. I'm not going to pay on this. And so that's when you really start to take on debt. And at the same time, you're taking on debt in the form of student loans, which, you know, that's created a big problem in education where your student loans are all federally guaranteed. So they're willing to give you more. And since you're able to get more, colleges want to charge more so they can get more of this free money.
You can't get rid of in bankruptcy either, by the way.
And you can't get rid of them in bankruptcy. And so then, you know, you graduate from college and it's like, well, I have to go do something. I have to have some kind of job because I have to start paying on these loans right away. Mm-hmm. And if school actually cost what it's worth, it would cost a lot less. And if the funding wasn't through creating of debt, when you graduated and you didn't have a job right away, you wouldn't just settle for whomever is going to give you the first like rope that you can use to kind of pull yourself along. You would advocate for yourself. You'd find something that would work, but you know, they defer your payments for like 6 months or a year, 18 months, something like that.
Yeah.
And then
it's on.
And then that's it. Now you owe us and you need to start paying us. And
I know guys with six-figure student loans.
Yeah.
Like that's insane. And then they wonder like, why are the millennials? Why are the Generation Z not going to be able to buy homes? Well, there's your answer.
Yeah. They've got tens of thousands of dollars in student loan debt that's sitting against their credit. And then the banks are like, yeah, you've only got like a 675 or 680. We're not going to be able to give you a loan for a home or if we do, that one's going to be at some outrageous interest payment. And then so you get a home and you're paying for your home with, you know, in debt. And it's like, I have to keep working. I have to have a job. I have to like keep these things together. And it becomes this like hamster wheel treadmill of keeping you tied up in a system that otherwise you might, you know, you might be able to pull a ripcord and escape from with something other than, you know, winning the lottery. I don't have time to go invest in my $1 million idea.
Because you don't have the money for it.
I don't have the money for it. And I can't afford to not be at work because I have to be able to pay all these payments or I can't afford to. I had, you know, so many people my age are working two jobs. A friend of mine has a master's degree and works full time at one company and then works part time at another company in the evenings. And she is working a theater show. Her full time job and her part time job are not in theater, but we met working in theater years ago. And so she wanted to kind of get back into it a little bit and decided to do this theater show. And so she's not going to be able to work her part-time job. And we're texting and she's like, I don't know if I can financially like make it through the month of March I can't work this second job. And I'm like, this is insane. Yeah. We should not be working multiple jobs to try and make ends meet, if that's what you're doing just to make ends meet, just to pay, you know, your credit card, your car loan, your rent, your mortgage, your student loans, whatever else you have going on, how are you ever supposed to, you know, fucking Dave Ramsey, like, oh, put your money into savings and bonds and stocks and, you know, Roth IRAs and CDs and this and that. And it's like, what money? I've got like $200, maybe $300 a month that I can do something with.
Well, that's the thing too. It was like, you just said at the beginning of that, you know, you get into the business of, you go to school and then you take this little $500 or $1,000 credit card to what? Build your credit, mm-hmm. right? Like, you have to do it. You have to do it because someday your dream is to maybe own your own home, but you don't even own it. You're basically leasing it, you know, like, because if you don't make those payments, they take the whole house.
Yeah.
You could be paid off 95% and they have the right to take the whole house.
And that 95% is probably more than what the initial loan was.
Yeah. Well, but the other thing is that if you calculate it out, you're paying for the house twice or three times over the course of the mortgage. Like, if you tally it up, it's an insane amount. And if you don't do it, you're not going to own. So you're going to have to rent from somebody. And like, there's an argument to be made of being a perpetual renter. It just kind of sucks sometimes. But like, I remember when we pulled up and moved down here, I had just renewed my mortgage. I had just renewed my mortgage, which is a bad thing because, you know, it's a bad thing. At the time I was like, oh, we didn't think we were moving. But then I had only gotten in maybe 2 months, 3 months into this mortgage when we decided to move. Mm-hmm. I had to pay a $15,000 penalty. $15,000 just to break the mortgage, just to sell the house and give the bank its money back. Mm-hmm. $15,000. It's rigged. I remember when I moved to Vancouver, and I've said this before, I work with a lot of millionaires, some billionaires. Mm-hmm. They're in a whole different league. I've worked with a lot of self-made millionaires. But in all of those cases, they did not have a student loan. Not one of them had a student loan. They started a business because they had money. You had money. Like that extra, I think my student loan payments, I remember when I started off, I think they were like $300 a month. Maybe $350. $300 a month goes a long way if you're starting to save up for something.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I see a lot is, you know, the predatory lending and the like... There were all of these posts going around social media late last year, I think, and it would be people in for car loans, and it would be like, this is Rod, he's paying, you know, $500 a month, for like 48 months, and you quickly do the math on that, and it's like you're paying $180,000, for this like piece of shit truck or. You know, these payday loan service providers where, okay, we'll give you, you know, $500 right now and you owe us, we're actually talking about this at work today. You owe us, you know, next Monday, you owe us $700. And if you don't pay it until Tuesday, now you owe us $900. Yep. And these like obscene interest rates that are like just basically stealing from people while pretending,
you're helping.
And an argument can be made, right, for a mortgage payment. The bank gives you $250,000, $500,000, whatever. You buy a house that's worth that on land, it typically appreciates in value. So, mm-hmm. you know, you're on a 15, 20, 30 year mortgage. By the time you've paid off, you're three times the actual borrowed amount. Your home is now theoretically worth much more than it was when you moved in. Like, there's an asset there. There's something that there's an opportunity that you have, like a generational wealth that can be passed along. This like credit card debt, this compounding interest on, you know, spending $100 on a new sound system for your car or swiping for gas or whatever, and then they're charging that 17 or 30%. There's nothing that they can come collect from you on this. You know, the bank, loaning you money for a house or even a car, despite the fact that, that cars depreciate pretty quickly, there's an asset there. The credit card stuff is just a trick, basically, to get you to into this debt system. Yeah.
Yeah, it's magic. And that's what's evil that, about it.
They know that because, like, society has completely avoided teaching financial literacy to kids in school. Like,
well, yeah, and like they, it's super gross because, like, okay, for example, with Luchando, right? The only way I could get the money to do Luchando was by through debt financing. That's just saw that guy I worked with.
Yeah,
got trapped into payday loans, missed payment one. And interest became legit $700,000.
700%.
Or 700%. Yeah. So this, like, it was the only way I could get it. But like before we were, you know, you were trying to get somebody who would like become a part owner, like get some equity. Now there are fair ways to do lending. There are fair, non-sinful ways to do lending. And one of them is like an equity partnership. Another is like charging a rent or a fee. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is like, you know, they've gotten so loosey goosey with vetting people on whether their debt, like they're safe to lend to. And then who does it get passed on to? You saw in 2008, they got the too big to fail. All these banks that were giving out crazy loans to people that could not make those things happen. When the housing market crashed, all those houses were underwater. Did the banks have to take one on the chin? Not at all.
No.
100% back 100% bailed out by you, the taxpayer, even if you didn't have one of those bad loans. You know, it drives me crazy when they look into, like, when they calculate GDP, right? It's such a bullshit number. It includes government spending.
Yeah.
It includes government spending. It shouldn't include that, but it does.
Because the government doesn't produce anything. It just collects. It doesn't produce anything. This always drove me nuts. I took an economics class in high school, and we were in the same class taught that the multiplier effect, which is where every dollar the government spends is actually like $3 in magic money because they reinvest. But then, like, the same people will tell
that's
you to trickle down.
Lies. That's what it is.
Trickle-down economics isn't real. A rich person spending money doesn't somehow go down to the lowest level. I'm like, that's the multiplier effect, just the private individual instead of the government. But at somehow, least the private individual starts with wealth.
It's somehow this government that paid for this school and pays the tenure on this professor is teaching me this other way, right? That's like the same thing with like fractional reserve banking, right? Like the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Treasury, they don't print all the money. It's not like all of that is in cash. Most of it is the zeros on a computer screen. And so fractional reserve banking is where the bank is not expected to have your money sitting in it if you deposit it. Only a fraction of it. It's like 10%.
Yeah.
And so basically, it might even be lower than that. So basically, if I put $1,000 into the bank, they legally can then lend out $900 to other people. But on the books, I still have $1,000, but now there's this new $900 out in the circulation. So now we've just magically created 90% more money. Mm-hmm. So every loan creates more phony money. And then on top of it, you know, it just keeps going and going and going again, because where else are you going to put your money? Under your mattress? You know, you could invest in things, and it goes back to like the whole capitalism thing of where everything needs to grow in order to make it back. So these guys have to lend this money out. They have to. That's their business model. It's not how many people can we get to deposit money in here. That's just a minimal part of it. The rest of it is just debt. And so, and like, we let this happen. It's killing society completely.
Yeah. And I remember like 2010, you know, under Obama, there being this big discussion about how the national debt was at like $5 or $6 trillion and we'd never be able to pay it back. And it's like three or four times that now. And And there's all this upset that, you know, Elon Musk and Doge are cutting, like, oh, it's only 0.04% of the budget, this $10 billion that we were using to teach people how to be gay in sub-Saharan Africa. And it's like, I don't fucking care. It's exactly. My money. I'm tired of you spending it. We can't fucking afford it. Until our roads are fucking completely perfectly flat and drain off every single drop of rain that hits them, we cannot afford to go helping every fucking Tom, Dick, and Harry that wants some money. Like, we've got to rein it back.
No, because the rulers that allowed those politicians into power in the first place are powered by this. They don't need the money. They can print it out of thin air. They can just put it in their account. It's about power and control. And on top of it, so like, who are the two presidents that tried to get themselves out from underneath that system? Lincoln and Kennedy.
Mm. Shot in the head.
Lincoln with the greenbacks. Kennedy was talking about bringing back the greenback right before. Right before. So good luck with that. And then... Yeah, and it's like you pay all this income tax in, but if you do the math on it, most of that income tax doesn't go to those programs. It goes to paying the interest on the debt.
Yeah.
It goes towards paying the interest on the debt, the usury. So in order to finance all those programs, the government needs to borrow more. And that's what they did, is they just borrow more. And who are they borrowing it from? We don't get their names.
Yeah.
Private company, private, you know, private bank, never get to find out. Same thing as like in London. It's in every country in the world.
Yeah.
It's in every country of the world. The only ones that it's not in are the ones that seem to get invaded a lot. Like, you know, or it's like you look at the list and it's like, who's not on this list? That's the private bank owners. And it's like North Korea, Iran, you know, it's like, oh, okay. And then somehow, you know, they just end. Libya was trying to get off of it and that didn't happen. And so you got this endless cycle and it's unsustainable. We're never going to get out from underneath it. And Trump's not talking about it. He's not going to get rid of the Federal Reserve. Trump just said it the other day. He's going to keep the Federal Reserve going in perpetuity. They're just going to print infinite money.
Yeah.
This is insanity. And you go back to it and it's like, you know, when I bought my land, I bought it from a guy who had bought it from a family. That family was basically given that land because they had a claim on it right from the get-go. Right from once they parceled out the land, they just had to fill out some paperwork, and that was their property. A lot of North America was set up that way. A lot of North America was, you came out, you set up, you got a claim, and that was your, and you built it up. So generation to generation, and that was the thing, you know, like, who are the people who have pretty much paid off their homes now? Boomers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I went to originally sell my home in 2020, I had got everything ready, got everything and fixed up the roof, fixed up all these different things, got everything repaint. Everything was ready to go. And then just as we're about to do it, we did another market research on my neighborhood and the prices had plummeted by like a solid, like 20%. And so we're like, well, I'm not selling. Why did they plummet by that? Well, in 2020, when all the lockdowns were happening and people were going out of jobs and they were having to, you know, forced to hang out together, a lot of these, sadly, baby boomers who are empty nesters sitting in their homes, finding out that they don't get along with their spouse that much, ended up divorcing and selling their homes. But because so many of them divorced and sold their homes, that plummeted the prices. Now, you know, a year later, it was better, but like that's what ended up happening. And a lot of boomers have this equity. Now, it's not like they got it for free. They did have to work for it. I mean, like, if you check the interest, listen to me. If you check the interest rates that boomers had to pay, because like we complain, I had like a 2.75 mortgage, right? 2.75%. Mm-hmm. But like my parents' generation, they were paying like credit card amounts for mortgages then. It was like 15, 18%. Now the prices were lower, and so it had to kind of fluctuate. Once the interest rates went down, the prices of the houses went up. And, you know, like you've heard,
because it was easier to borrow more money.
Yeah. But have you even heard of like what the word mortgage means?
No.
The Latin origins of the word mortgage.
Death agreement.
Yeah. Death grip. Death grip. Mortgage. So, yeah, it's so crazy, man. It's, yeah, buying power was so much better back then, though. Yes and no. I mean, like, yes and no. Depends on the thing, right? Like, they didn't have all the cheap shit from China then. You know, they, do you know how much, like, I remember when my parents had to, like, save up to get a microwave. You know, you're blowing up microwaves. You know,
I got 10 of them in the garage right now.
Exactly. Like they used to be a pretty like expensive item. Those TVs, those big teak wooden cabinet, grandma's house, awesome TV with maybe a record player attached or something like that. Those things cost a fortune. Now we get like flat screens for like $200, you know?
Yeah. So, but the difference is the luxuries have dropped in price, but the essentials have all shot through the roof in price, like home prices and food prices and that kind of stuff. It's a huge issue, and it's going to be the thing that like essentially enslaves humanity forever.
Well, and that's why like you got to pay attention when guys like Elon Musk are talking about UBI, right? So UBI, universal basic income. He's like, well, AI is going to take all your jobs, so all these people are going to need something to do. So then, you know, and like, how are they going to buy food or do all those things? We're just going to give them UBI. I'm like, how's that not communism? How is that not communism? And then on top of it, you're going to slap onto it like a social credit score. So if you say something bad, you're going to get those things like withheld from you. So
yeah,
I agree. Like old tech was built to last. Dude, those old fridges are still running.
Yes.
You know, like those old fridges are still running. We talked about this in shitflation, but the point is that like, yeah, most of the stuff was much better then. Like, you know, like economically, it's just been getting worse and worse and worse generation by generation. And part of the reason is this corrosive, parasitic nature in our society called usury. So that's my issue for tonight.
That's a great issue. And that brings us to the middle of our episode, which means it's time for Loan Shark News. This news is going to need 26% of it paid back by next week. The next news segment, we're going to need three times the amount of news. Otherwise, we're coming and breaking your knees. Chaco, do you have any like weird phobias?
I think I've mentioned one on the show before. Yeah. I have this reoccurring nightmare of tripping and falling and hitting my eyeball on the corner of a table.
Yeah.
It's retarded.
I think I have the normal ones. I don't really like enclosed spaces. I'm not claustrophobic, but sometimes like, you know, you freak out. I don't like heights.
Lightning. I'm like a dog. I don't like lightning.
I feel like men don't suffer from phobias as much because we're not attention-seeking morons, like the opposite sex.
It depends, though, man. It depends. There's a lot of soft men these days that have a lot of... I guess maybe you should, you know, put a catalyst on whether we can call them men or not, but yeah.
Well, there's a woman who's battling mortusequusophobia.
That's a word.
Yes, it is. It is a crippling fear of ketchup, and she's speaking out about her struggle, calling her tomato trouble no laughing matter.
How did she get Mort into the name of that phobia, by the way? We just talked about Mort in mortgage.
No idea.
Death somehow found its way in there, and there's a Latin word for ketchup?
Yeah. She compares being confronted with the creepy condiment as being like being held at gunpoint. She has had to steer clear for it as long as she can. She's also been forced to endure joking from people who don't take her suffering seriously. And then she's got all these stupid duck face photos of herself out at restaurants. I can't even look at a bottle of ketchup or have it anywhere near me. Woodman 32 confessed to her social media followers in a video that completely, quickly racked up to close to 1 million views. I'm fully aware of how dramatic it sounds, and I've always been embarrassed by it. If someone were to hold me at gunpoint, I would freeze in panic, and that's exactly how I feel if someone shoved ketchup in my face. She's completely stumped as to how it all started. I think it started right before she recorded that video to try and get 1 million views.
Or she had a crazy narcissistic mother.
Yeah.
And like who yelled at her one time for like, you know, using the bottle and too much ketchup came out. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, she was 3 years old and it was done for life, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. You know, and you don't watch much wrestling, but you're familiar with The Undertaker.
Yes.
He's like one of the big names. So Mark Calloway, who is The Undertaker, apparently has a massive phobia of cucumbers. And guys would like rib him by like getting cucumbers in his bag or putting cucumbers on his plate. And he freaks the hell out of him. It's the weirdest thing. Hmm. You know, this is a guy who's been put through like flaming tables, but he's terrified of cucumbers. This is not like Indiana Jones and snakes, you know? So yeah, that's a weird one. But again, the fact that they came up with a Latin word for it is laughable.
Bizarre. Yeah. Absolutely. It's laughable. It sounds like total bullshit. It's catch up, calm down, move on. You don't need to be the center of attention.
Should I bring him
you
one?
Have a news story, right?
Yeah. Thieves used a stolen card to buy a $523,000 lottery ticket. And now the victim wants to share the winnings. Thieves used a stolen card to buy a winning French lottery ticket worth 500,000 euros or 523,000 US dollars. But they vanished before cashing in. And now they're among France's most famous fugitives. The man whose card was stolen, identified in police documents as Jean-David E., is offering to split the cash with the lucky winners. He wants his wallet back, too. And mm-hmm. the thieves, meanwhile, face the risk of arrest. As of Saturday, the state lottery operator La Française des Jeux, or FDJ, said that no one had submitted the ticket to cash out. It's an incredible story.
So they have the ticket, but mm-hmm. they somehow figured out that guy's card was used. And okay. I think they should just give that guy the money. Ha ha, fuck you, thieves.
Yeah, they won't, though. Because and I mean, there's nothing about the thieves. I'm guaranteeing you, yeah, these thieves were definitely French, like
just
rural
as French as they come.
Rural French guys. Maybe they were yellow vest wearers or something, but they're clearly French nationals.
They're all wearing berets and the striped shirts.
Oh, yeah. They're eating baguettes and brie. Yeah, absolutely.
Baguettes, just choking them down. Just choking down baguettes.
At the shop, a vendor told him two apparently homeless men had used one of his cards to buy the winning scratch-off lottery ticket. They were so totally happy that they forgot their cigarettes and their belongings and walked out like crazy people.
Whoa. It was a scratcher?
Yeah.
How do you know that a scratcher is a winner without
they
scratching?
They did it in front of the vendor.
Oh, I see. I get it. That makes more sense now. Okay. That's why they won't give them the money.
And now the guy's like trying to plead with these thieves, right? He's like, you risk nothing. We will share it with you, he said, as you will be able to change your lives. Time is working against us, he said. The ticket will eventually expire. So
what a putz. I've got one here. Amir Jardin, 38, and his fiancee Ruth Moore, 27, have been finding treasures in dumpsters since 2022. Over the years, the pair from Dorchester have discovered items such as faulty iPads and drones. They've also got trainers, luxury perfumes, and designer clothing. They have three children, aged 7, 5, and 6 months. Having children outside of wedlock, by the way. Oof. They stock their fridge and pantry with food that they find in the supermarket dumpster. They spend up to 9 hours a week.
Apparently.
Yeah. They spend 9 hours a week trawling through the bins and say it saved them $9,000 in home decor and saved them roughly $11,000 a year on groceries. By eating trash, congratulations. You've saved money.
9 hours a week, by the way, 9 hours a week. That's a part-time job.
You
could have made money to do not that for, mm-hmm. and been a benefit to. My son is into electronics. He's mm-hmm. he's really into electronics. He really likes looking up stuff and learning how to fix things. And he's really into these videos where they do these things where they go to like outside of a Best Buy or something and like root through, and they're always finding like, you know, iPads and Nintendo Switches and stuff. And I always say to him, like, you know, it's staged as heck. Like those are totally fake. They're totally fake. But like, I get the dream, but I'm not buying it with these people, man. I'm not buying it at all.
9 hours a week, 9 hours a week finding stuff, and then you got to fix it, and then you got to find a buyer. And then you're like, you're risking eating, throwing out food. Like, don't get me wrong. I understand that it's a Best Buy date, not like an expiration date, and you can sell after that. You know, you still consume it after that for a lot of things. Yeah. But at the same time,
it's like, covered in other stuff.
I would rather have fresh food. Yeah, I don't want anything out of a dumpster.
No. No, yeah. And like grocery stores are notorious for having to throw away food. Like, you know, always people say, like, oh, they can donate to a food bank or something like that. And, like, actually they can't.
Yeah,
like, they're legally not allowed to, you know.
Yeah. Well, this has been the Loan Shark News. If you don't have my news for me by next Tuesday, I'm going to break your thumbs. You better get it. So that takes care of our news segment this week. But you know, it doesn't take care of paying the cost of hosting the website and podcast. And if you want to help us offset those costs, you can visit us at patreon.com/HWIDG, which stands for
Here's What I Don't Get.
Yep. And over there, we have two tiers. We have a $1 supporter tier to just say, hey, I like the show. I hope you guys keep making it. And we have a $5 bonus content tier where, you know, we'll throw you some bonus episodes. We're going to be recording a bonus episode right after this. Mm-hmm. And I have a really exciting story to share with that.
Awesome. Looking forward to that myself.
I'm calling an audible on you because I remembered what I was going to bring in before I remembered the other thing that I was going to bring in. So here's what I don't get. Franchise executions. Okay. Are you looking forward to the new live action Disney Snow White coming out?
Yes, actually I am. I'm really looking forward to it coming up because I want it to die.
Yeah, I saw an ad for that this week and that is coming out in March.
Going for it.
Yeah, still coming out. I was like, why would you not just cancel it, man? Just cancel. These stars cannot help themselves but reveal like what pieces of shit they are and then, you know, ruin any chances of their stuff catching on and continuing to exist. Years ago, you know, the late night TV show panels, you know, if you're promoting a movie, you'd go be on Conan or Jay Leno or David Letterman, you know, maybe you'd be on The View or Ellen or something during the day. But or, you know, a little segment would be on you on ET. And all of that was like really, really geared to making you look good and interesting and selling what you had going on and not you revealing like what a moron and piece of shit you are.
Yeah, but now with the pitch. It was with pitch.
And you only had to be on for, you know, a 15-minute segment, you know, on the couch there next to.
Show a clip from the movie, unless you're Paul Rudd on Conan. If you're Paul Rudd on Conan, your movie is not going to get shown. It'll always be
the
Mac and Me clip.
Yeah. But yeah, you're on the couch. You tell like, oh, how was filming this? Oh, it was so great. Chris Pratt is such like a fun guy. He used to play pranks on us, and we had a great time. Anyway, this clip from the movie is where we like fight a space demon, and then you know, blow some stuff up. Like, let's take a look at it. And they're watching. They're like, wow, can you believe this movie's going to be in theaters next week? Thanks for coming on. Our musical guest, Hoobastank. And that was the thing, right? It was 15 minutes in and out. But now social media, you have like constantly have access to these people. And because we have lauded them for decades, they think that they're interesting and that their opinions matter. And
Mark
they Hamill. Absolutely do not.
Oh, yeah.
So Reacher is the series, the season 3 just came out on last Thursday. They released like the first 3 episodes. So of course, Alan Richardson, whatever his name is, he's doing some media stuff for to promote his new series. And I guess he went to college with Matt Gaetz or something. And he went on this fucking tirade about Matt Gaetz being a piece of shit and that, you know, he's a pussy and this
the only
and that
one
and
not on Apex Dole, by the way.
And yeah, and he's it's like, hey man, I don't fucking care. Tell me about how much fun you had making Reacher. Tell me about how much you like the character. I don't care about what you have to say about politics. I'm able to separate the art and the artist. I know that everyone that makes these shows hates me. Mm-hmm. I like the books and I'm sticking with the show until they like betray the spirit of the books in any way, basically. And so far they've been pretty good to sticking to the, you know, heart of the books. And so I'll keep watching it. But it's just like you, when you run your mouth like this, you risk people just turning on you. And I cannot believe that they do not, they haven't like put this together. Like, don't be on social media. If you are going to be on social media, just like only put forth positivity. There is this like push that you have to say something about politics or whatever, like national tragedy is going on. Don't just shut your fucking mouth. Just shut up. Kathleen Kennedy is talking about retiring now. It's like, oh, great.
Yeah. Overlord DVD is finally going to get his day in the sun.
You managed to run every single property that Lucasfilm had worth anything full speed into the ground, full fucking warp speed into the ground.
That has been executed so bad. I used to love Star Wars. I will never watch a single more. Like, and you can't even fix it.
Like it's
dead. You can't fix it. It's unfixable.
And the thing was, like, it's because they injected all this stuff and they mocked the fans. And they, you know, this Rachel Ziegler with the Snow White,
beginning. Yeah. Peter Dinklage, you brought up about the kicking out the ladder
with the dwarves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shitting on the fans kind of just became acceptable after 2016. It was just like, oh yeah, we can tell all of our fans that they're pieces of shit and they just have to watch our movie. And that hasn't been working out for them.
But Brie Larson do that first. Like I feel like she did that for like the writers and stuff like that too. Like the reviewers, she was shitting on all men.
Yeah.
And it's, there was, she's on like a, like she's on a path to like repentance, I guess. Like she's not answering anything. She's learned her lesson.
Yes.
Ziegler has not learned her lesson.
No. But what was worse was that she didn't come out and be like, all of my fans are idiots and I hate them. She came out and just shit all over the property that her movie was based on.
Yep.
And it was like, are you this is a beloved classic film that people have loved for generations.
It's the thing you say when you have loved for hundreds of years.
Yeah, the thing you say when you get interviewed about this movie is, I am so lucky to be a part of this. I love Snow White as a kid. I used to dress up as Snow White. This is a dream come true. Blah, 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 blah. It's going to be great. I hope everyone loves it. But comes out and is just like, this isn't the movie that you want. This is the movie that we want to make. And if you don't like it, fuck you. And then shocked. Well, why do people not like me? Because you shit all over their favorite movie. For no, absolutely
you're racist,
no reason.
Bigoted, horrible people, apparently.
Yeah, it's just like, it just keeps happening. People just keep walking out on TV or walking onto social media and pulling out a gun and shooting themselves right through the foot. And then they're shocked. They're like, what happened to my foot? I can't believe this.
It's not even just in movies, like brands, like products, like big companies will do this kind of thing with their commercials.
Yeah.
You know, and like Gillette still feeling the pain. Bud Light still feeling the pain from all this kind of stuff. Dude, I listen to, I'm a big Flames fan.
Yeah.
Right. And I get it. Like from an athlete's perspective, the only time I want to hear your political, like the only time where I actually care, like you get a free pass is if you don't really want to meet with the leader of the country. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like if I won the Stanley Cup and I got to go and like hang out with Trudeau for a day, I'm going to stay home. Yeah. Right? I'm going to stay home. Yeah. You don't have to be an asshole about it. Dude, we talked the last episode about this Four Nations tournament. And I put on my podcast from, you know, it's Rogers Sportsnet, Flames Talk. And I had to turn it off because they turned it into a big political thing. And yeah. All it was an orange man bad thing. There's a writer that I used to really like, Eric Francis. Most people don't like him because he's kind of a negative Nancy sometimes, but he gets it right more often than not. And the guy went off on this big, long tirade about Trump. And the whole time I'm listening, I'm like, you haven't once put any of the blame on Trudeau and the things that led up to this.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to a fucking Flames show. I shouldn't have to listen. This is why I put this on, is to put my brain to bed. I don't need to listen to this right now.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to tune in anymore. I mean, whoa, they're going to lose one Paraguayan download. But like, it's still, I don't know why they do this.
I don't get it. Like sell your, a great example of this is Dawn dishwashing liquid. Decades ago, they figured out that Dawn was like the best stuff for cleaning animals and oil spills. And okay. Dawn was like, Johnson & Johnson, whoever makes Dawn was like, oh, we're the best thing for oil spills. Well, then you guys can just have as much as you need. It's free. And then they did not publicize that at all. It was like, they did it for like 25 years before someone, I think there was some, you know, oil spill going on. They're talking about cleaning and they're like, oh yeah, Dawn donated like hundreds of thousands of gallons of their dishwashing liquid to this. And it was like, they went to Dawn and Dawn was like, oh yeah, we've been doing this for years. And then they started like putting the little pictures of ducks on the bottles and that's it. They're not going out there and like demonizing oil companies. They're just like, yes, we're good at cleaning your dishes and we're good at cleaning animals. And this is our product. Please buy it. Tide. You wash your pants and the grass stains come out. Like, this negging of the audience, the negging of the source material, the negging of people around you that aren't related to your property, it does nothing but garner you ill will. You know, there are celebrities that people say all seem nice. It's because they tell nice stories about the people that they work with or they're kind. You know, Keanu Reeves, you're not seeing anyone telling stories about what a piece of shit Keanu Reeves is. He's not going on talk shows to, you know, interview for the next John Wick movie and then bitching about what a piece of shit Trump is. I'm sure he's probably, I don't know, maybe he's liberal, maybe he's not, but he's not fucking running his mouth about the stuff. Hey, I'm in this video game. It's a really fun. I enjoy doing it. Here's these cool things. There's always stories about him like buying motorcycles for his stunt team or giving money to these charities and like, or looking at after strangers on the train. That's the example that you want to follow. If you're a celebrity, that's who you want to be. You want to be famous for being likable. And these people just act like pricks and assholes and then are shocked when people are like, yeah, you know, I don't really care for a movie that stars a prick or an asshole.
Well, to be fair, some of it can be blamed on the media too, mm-hmm. You know, because the media yeah. will ask these ridiculously offside questions and then cancel you if you don't answer them. You know, like they get really angry if you're not going to talk. Like, how many times have you heard of like a Hollywood actor who can't get work anymore because they won't denounce Trump? You know, or they, and again, I'm not a fan of Trump, but at the same time, like these things are nuanced. I'm not a low info guy, you know? So like, and if I'm promoting a movie, what the fuck are we doing talking about?
Yeah. It's got, unless you're doing a biopic about Trump, there's really no reason for him to come up. Unless Matt Gaetz is in this season of Reacher, there's no reason to talk about him.
Even the one guy who did play Trump in that recent biopic, it cost him because he it went the other way. The pendulum went the other way. Mm-hmm. So he couldn't get other actors to come on these interview shows with them because they didn't want to be seen with him because he was toxic, because you've just pissed off half of the population by even taking the role. And so
just, you know, just keep it. There's so much to be said for just not saying anything. I've talked about it before, but I have gotten through so many conversations by just sitting there and not saying a word. And people will open up to you. They want to fill that silence. People hate silence. And there's like a famous quote, like, I'd rather say nothing and be thought to seem foolish than open my mouth and erase any doubt. I don't remember who said that.
That's a good quote. It's probably Mark Twain or something.
Yeah, probably. But that's like, again, it kind of goes back to Latin, you know, no male role models, no role models of any kind. People just run their mouth. They don't, it's one, and I realize there's an irony here of a person who literally just runs his mouth on the internet once a week.
Well, that's different. Like,
it is different.
That's our shtick. That's the point of the show. I get it if somebody's going to, look, you cannot like Rachel Maddow.
Yeah.
Okay. But she gets a license to talk politics because that's literally the content of her show.
Yes.
Right. You know, Jon Stewart, Greg Gutfeld, you know, okay. Cause that's the content of your show. Not fucking Snow White.
Yeah.
Not Snow White. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. You want to talk about that kind of stuff. Then go be on Rachel Maddow. Don't play pretend characters. Don't play pretend characters doing pretend things and pretend lands. Like it's so, because even, you know, obviously we see it from more of a conservative bent where, you know, Alan Richardson is attacking Matt Gaetz, and because mm-hmm. we're right leaning, we're annoyed by that. Mm-hmm. But it also goes the other way too, where you're always going to anger half the population. So just no, I'm not going to talk about any of that. It's not relevant to why I'm here. I'm here to sell you on this TV show that I made. I'm here to sell you on this movie that I just made. I'm here to sell you on my new album. Do you want to talk about music? I want to talk to you about like all these great people that I worked with. I want to talk about what the creative process was. Yeah. I want to talk like that is what is relevant.
Like if I was a star athlete again, I would not talk about it.
And
like,
and your example is great. I don't want to fucking go to the White House. You know, there's a bunch of, the Eagles hate America because they don't want to go hang out with Trump. I don't want to fucking go hang out with Trump. Hey, congratulations, Tab. You won Podcast of the Year. You're invited to the White House. Fuck you.
It's not
send
the 80s
me a
anymore.
Trophy and suck my dick.
It's not the 80s anymore where like Reagan has the map. It's not like that anymore. It's more divided than ever.
Yeah.
Even then it's cringe, but who cares? Like now, like Tom Brady, right? I remember mm-hmm. when they would pick on Tom Brady to get his comment on things. He's like, no comment, but he had a MAGA hat in his locker right mm-hmm. there. That was the most he said, was just having that in his locker. And they ran him out, man. Like they were really bad. He stopped getting those endorsements. He's not in those commercials anymore. Well, now he is. That's I'm wrong. He's been in that Snoop Dogg. The one of the anti-Semitism commercial that just came out.
Yeah. You know what that commercial really made me feel? An inordinate amount of hatred for Tom Brady and Snoop Dogg.
Everyone on this planet.
Yeah. It sounds stupid when you say it this way. You know what? But it does also sound kind of right. And I kind of just fucking hate you and want you. I just want you all to be taken to a farm somewhere and then build a dome around it and let you guys just stop existing.
It was straw man, the commercial.
Yeah.
Like it's a straw man, the commercial. And that's another issue I'm going to bring in someday. Just Snoop Dogg. Like the guy's had what? Murder charges. He's had gun charges. I'm not sure if he's had like battery or abusing a woman charges. He's produced porn. He's sold drugs. And yet you guys got him on like Bed Bath and Beyond. Oh goodness. Like they act like this guy is like super great. And it's like, okay, when was the last time he put out anything of substance or value? He's a clown. He's a caricature of himself. There you go.
Gave me this $100 bill a couple years ago.
There you go. That's going to be worth something.
It's worth more than the American dollar. I'll tell you that.
I'll bet it is. No, this is a good one, man.
Good issue. That's my issue. I don't understand why people keep just hitting the accelerator into a brick wall with their stuff. That like, I'm not a publicist and I figured this out. So why they used to be, celebrities used to be so controlled in what they could say and talk about.
They still are,
but they're
controlled in the wrong way now.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. And it's like, just be neutral, just be neutral and fun and do fun, neutral things. No, they have
to say these things because CAA, who controls their careers, forces them to. This has been documented fact. This is, yeah, you gotta bend that knee. And yeah. You know, like, I have this theory that Disney is doing this on purpose. You know, like, movie economics are super weird. Oh,
they're so good. They're so bogus. Yeah.
Right. And so, like, you know, if they get an actor or an actress to sign on and they give them like points on the movie, then they like actively like do all kinds of like, you know, the most crooked accounting ever to make it look like there was a loss so that they don't have to pay them. And like, you've seen the Mel Brooks, the producers. You seen the producers? It's that, you know, like it's that. And like, I have this feeling, man, like Disney's stock is tanking. And I wonder how many of them are shorting their own stock, you know, like the amount of loss on these things. Like, you know, there's always that complaint about like the $900 hammer in government spending. I guarantee you, this is what's going on in Hollywood.
Oh, like, of course.
The CGI is objectively worse than it was 20 years ago. And yet somehow the cost of making a movie is skyrocketed way beyond. And I think some of these people who are in like the executive branch of Disney also own all these little shitty little like pop-up companies. And then they charge the $900 for a stapler to use everything along the way just to get those losses done. But it goes into their own pocket. So even if the movie loses, they don't lose. Do you know what I mean? Like this kind of stuff happens.
They do the thing where they like put all the debt into the, you know, so they're making a Superman movie and it's like Superman Rebirth Corp, right? And then they transfer all the debt into that thing and they go, that thing's going to have to file for bankruptcy. And meanwhile, they've taken all the assets and pocketed all the money in order to
rent to themselves.
And to make those. I've come to this realization last few years of like looking more and more at corporate accounting through my work and seeing that like all these companies do is shuffle money around into like non-existent mini accounts so that they can go, oh yeah, this is a loss leader and this is a loss leader and this is a loss leader. And all of our departments across the board are showing losses. So we're not going to be able to pay any taxes. And meanwhile, then you hear like, oh, we made $180 million in profit. And you're like,
but you just,
excuse me, what?
Yeah. No, it's all funny money. Like, dude, the economy is a trick. The whole thing is a total trick. It's all fake and gay.
That's the Matrix, man. That is the Matrix around us.
Oh, amen to that. Good issue. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, that's it for this week's episode. So until next time, I'm Tab Burt.
I'm El Chaco.
We'll catch you guys next time.
Ciao, ciao.
If you want to call into the Here's What I Don't Get hotline, call us at 704-750-9434 and tell us what you don't get. Or you can visit us on Patreon under there's a voicemail upload channel. And I didn't see any voicemails in that channel this week. Oh, and it doesn't look like anything came into the real voicemail hotline
yet. Okay, so C. Villa has been asking a couple of questions here. So we'll address them. Might as well. You're saying there's no voicemails this week?
Nope.
None. Okay. All right, Seville, I'm going to answer some questions for you. First off, let's go back to the first one you said here. Wait, Joel likes the Flames. Why hasn't he mentioned that before? I'm pretty sure I've mentioned that a few times before. I'm pretty sure I've mentioned that. That's my team. I'm from Calgary. That's my team. Always been my team. I hate the Oilers, which is probably why I didn't cheer that loud when Connor McDavid scored the game-winning goal for Canada. And this goes into the second question. Why are you an OCBM survivor? Because if you listen to last week's episode, there was a threat made by one of the members of this show regarding that hockey game.
It was Tim.
It was Tim. Yeah, it was Tony. And Canada won. And so the OCBM attack on Canada took place. But thankfully, I was not in the vicinity. And so I survived it. Mm. And that's why my name is OCBM survivor for this one.
it's ICBM.
Ah! Okay.
Intercontinental Ballistic Missile.
CMS. I messed up the joke. C Villa, please, if you're still watching, please, does OCBM mean something else? And I didn't realize it this whole time. And it's like some disease or something like that.
I'm going to look this up right now.
Maybe ChatGPT has an idea. What does OCBM stand for? Let's see.
I think someone listening left us a voicemail during this, because here's now a voicemail.
Here's what I don't get.
And that's
Never
it.
Mind.
All right, I got some answers for what OCBM stands for here. There's four. Okay. The first one is Ohio competency-based model. So an educational framework implemented in Ohio focusing on competency-based learning approaches. I would have survived that, probably. Office Choice Blue Mountains, a business supply company located in the Blue Mountains region. Orange County Building Materials, a supplier of building materials based in Orange County, Texas. C Villa has just offered us occupational cack and ball man.
A cack and ball man.
Cack and ball man. Then we've got Orange County Biomedical Equipment Technician Society. That's not OCBM, ChatGPT. You're fantasizing.
That's like OCBMEST.
OC best. And then additionally, OCBM is used as a stock ticker symbol though specific details about the company it represents were not readily available.
Sounds like the deep state.
Sounds like a CIA holding. It's got total shares of 113.49 million shares outstanding, doesn't have a stock price, so this is probably a dead stock. This probably got rolled into something else.
Well, if you're a Patreon supporter, there is a live stream after this that's unlisted. There's a link in the Discord for us, and I also sent out a post last night to all the Patreon members. So if you want to continue in on the fun, we're going to be getting to some do-gets in bonus episode 66 just here in a few minutes. Until then, though, thank you for listening. We'll have another regular episode out hopefully very soon. Thanks for supporting the show. And until next time, I'm Tab.
I'm Chaco.
See ya.
God bless.